Is that on? Good.
My bad.
There you go. All right. So my name is Ashley, and this is Jack for some of you who are new this morning. And we're the pastors here at New Song, and we're glad that you're here. Today's going to be a little different. I don't know that I've ever given a message like this. It takes a lot of faith to give a message like this, and it's going to take a lot of faith from all of us this year to work through what we want to talk about this morning. But we've spent the last couple weeks talking about our new theme for the year, Take Your Next Step. Now, we used Joshua chapter 3 as the context for that, where the children of Israel had been delivered from Egypt. They wandered through the wilderness for 40 years, and now they're ready to enter the promised land. But wait, there's another body of water separating them. And God says to send the priests out there. And when they put their foot... Now the Jordan River was on average about 98 feet wide. And when it would overflow its banks during this time of harvest that the Bible tells us, it could be as much as a half a mile wide, depending on when, at least 10 feet deep, a half a mile wide. This is not something you can just like muscle through. Okay, we're just going to, you know, the kids would be bubbling under the water. I mean, that's not good, right? So we need some help here, Lord. And there was actually three different times in the Old Testament where God parted the Jordan River. And there was even a moment recorded in history in the 1800s where there was a landslide upstream and it blocked the flow of the Jordan all the way down to the Dead Sea. So this is something that's very much in the realm of possibility that God can do. But here, we're continuing in Joshua chapter 4. If you want to read this along with me, it says, "Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. He said to the sons of Israel, 'When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, "What are these stones?" then you shall inform your children, saying, "Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed. And all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever." So God parted the Red Sea at one point in the history of these people. Now, most of those people who crossed that Red Sea had already died at this point over this 40-year period. So here's a new generation of the sons of Israel who are ready to cross into this promised land, but there's this river in front of them. And God makes this promise to them, and he says, so once everybody gets across, I want a leader from each one of the 12 tribes to go out into the middle of Jordan, grab a big old stone, throw it on his shoulder, and make a pile of stones on the bank where you guys exited the Jordan River. And so that in future generations, when your children see those stones and they ask, "Hey, what's up with the pile of rocks over here?" you can tell them, that's where God parted the Jordan. It was a major milestone in the faith-building process for the children of Israel. And so what we want to talk about today is a milestone that we believe God has for us as New Song here in this part of our history as a body. And that is what we're going to call this year Freedom 513. We want to see New Song Community Church debt-free this year. Not only debt-free, but we want to do some improvements around the facility as well. And that takes a lot of money, as you can guess. And I'm going to just get it right out of the way up front. It's awkward for everybody to talk about money, right? Especially, I have some disclaimers here that we need to mention. So some of you just signed a membership covenant that says, "I believe in what New Song believes, and I will support them with my attendance and with my money." And it really could look like we set all this up in advance. So you signed it, and okay, now it's time to pay up, right? That's not the intent. I promise you these were two different streams of thought that have taken place over the last couple of years, actually, as we'll show you. Newcomers, visitors. You know, you come to a church, the last thing you want to hear is people asking for money. There's this negative stereotype about people asking for money, and I want to just put that out there. We don't expect you to come and empty your wallet to the church, all right? That's not the expectation for newcomers either. And in this room, we have some people who are some of the original donors that put big money on the line to help build this building and to help fund the construction of where we are enjoying today. And we are benefiting from the sacrifices that they made. And so if you, early on in the history of this church, if you gave up some large sums of money to help build this church, there's, again, no pressure on any one person to help make this happen. We're asking God to make this happen. And also, I want to mention moderation. Because later we're going to read in 1 Chronicles 29 where there was all kinds of gold and silver, and we're not going to gold plate the walls, all right? We just want to fix things up a little bit, make it look a little nicer. Some Sherwin-Williams instead of some gold on the walls, maybe. So we want to do everything in moderation and be completely responsible with the money that God has blessed us with. So with those disclaimers out of the way, I want to talk a little bit about when it comes to asking God to provide these type of resources. This is not a new thing that Jack and I just cooked up last week. We've actually been talking about this for a couple of years in deacons' meetings. We recognize that our facility has some needs. If you've driven through our parking lots and through some of those potholes, you know, we need some new pavement in the parking lot, right? If you've been through the classrooms, we have ripped and stained carpet. It's time, just like in your own house, to fix a few things up. And so we see some needs for that. We've been talking about those needs for a while. And then we had the idea, why don't we go to one of these capital campaign companies? There's actually places, that's what they do. They work with churches to help them ask for money in a very tactful way, and they give them all the right things to do and say. And there's a lot of training and actually leadership development that comes as part of that. It's not just about the money, so to speak. And then we saw that those type of companies, while they offer a great consulting service, they also charge about $20,000. And we didn't want to take the money that people have sacrificed and send it, you know, down to somebody else's ministry. And it's an important ministry, but we didn't feel called to support them in that way. Then there's this book I mentioned a little bit last year called The Great Evangelical Recession. And I want to mention a little bit more about this book in a minute. But at the pastor's conference last year, the leadership of our organization challenged all of our pastors to read this book. And it's really about it's really kind of despairing, the first half of the book, because here's six things that are going to crash the church if they don't change. And it's not this fear-mongering type book. It's based on real statistics that's happening and cultural trends and what's happening in the church, what's happening in society. And I remember sitting in this session at the pastor's conference, and God really spoke directly to me personally to make a commitment to the church financially this year. And I will share that with you here in a few minutes. Then in the last fall, we convened a finance committee of the deacons and a few other select brothers in the church. And we've been talking through what this would look like, how we would present this, and how to administer this fundraising in a godly way. So we collected some quotes and estimates. And over this last two-year period, we delayed a lot. Really, and prayed a lot, knowing that this is a lot to ask for, a lot to ask God for, a lot to ask our people for, and we don't take that lightly. I just want you to know that. As we talk about, this is something that I view as something historic that God can do in our midst that will give us something to something else. We have a lot going here. We have a bunch of people that love one another. And newcomers tell us that they see that. And that's really exalting Christ and then the Holy Spirit in us ministering to one another. That's really what we're about here. And to talk about money sometimes seems like an interruption to that, you know, the warm fuzzies of Sunday morning and fellowships, like, oh, you just threw a bucket of cold water on all that warm fellowship when you're asking for money now. You know, I want to be really cautious about that. And so bottom line is I just want you to hear our hearts. We're not here to fleece the flock, as some people say, right? We're here to present this challenge, this Jordan River experience that we see for our church today. So one of the things that's called out in this book is really fascinating. You've heard of the baby boomer generation, this population bubble moving through our culture, and that generation is passing away. They are the most committed to the Lord and the most committed to giving. And this book was written 5 years ago, and it says 50% of the church's giving will disappear in the next 14 years. Then if you take that out to 30 years, 70% of the church's giving will be lost. So there's something that the church needs to do to be financially responsible in coming generations. We want to get ahead of that. We don't want to be surprised by that. And some of those factors include the fact that the younger generations are not coming to the Lord in the same numbers that the older generations were. Younger generations aren't giving to the same level that the older generations were. And when you add all these factors together, there's a decline in financial resources coming into the church over the next 30 years. And so we want to be prepared for that. One of the things that he had advocated was, hey, get out of debt. You know, just like Dave Ramsey would tell you on his podcast, right? It's time to get out of debt. Walk those baby steps, and it's time to pay for what you've taken this loan for. So we are, and I want to be really careful to say that we are extremely grateful for those who sacrificed to bring the church to where we are today. In the same respect, you know, there's a lot of people who really contributed and built. We had the Phones for You campaign. There's a lot of other things besides money that happened with people's time and resources to make this church happen. And then we're standing on their shoulders, able to see so much farther.
The Holtzes are laughing. The Phones for You campaign, never mind. Yeah. It was just, yeah. I know what that was about. Wow. Yeah. It's a lot of work. Yeah.
So for those of you who haven't heard the story of how the church started, they basically went through the phone book and called a whole bunch of people, like 30,000 people, and got a bunch of people on the mailing list, a bunch of people signed up and showed up the first Sunday. So there's a lot of hard work that went into launching this church. And so we recognize that. But then at the same time, it's now our turn to take this church to the next place. So we want to get out of debt and have the freedom to do with that money that's going out for debt every month, to do more ministry with that money. And that's really what this comes down to. So his solution in the book was, hey, get out of debt and make disciples, people who are doing the work of the kingdom. And when everybody is engaged in the work of the kingdom, doing what God has called them to do, you don't have as many expenses because the work is on every person, so to speak. So there's a lot of a blessing in making disciples as well from a financial perspective. So here's some other things that we need to be aware of. And again, this is kind of like a family meeting this morning. You know, these are just some odd things that you should be aware of. You shouldn't worry about them. But we talked with Grant. He's our resident accountant, and he helps us with a lot of things. And he said, you know, the tax laws have changed this year. And with this tax reform, it's really not incentivizing people to have charitable deductions anymore, because the standard deduction is so high, a lot of people wouldn't be incentivized to give. Now, I can see where that might apply in non-church circumstances, but I would think that wouldn't impact our own giving, because really that's not our motive for giving as believers. Our giving is in obedience to the Lord and His Word. There's also, right now, there was a judicial ruling that ruled the parsonage tax exemption unconstitutional. I think it was the Freedom from Religion Foundation that brought this lawsuit, but they're basically trying to attack the church and take away the tax benefits of nonprofit that we've enjoyed in the United States for a long time. And so that's actually on the books right now. We're hoping that that's overturned in the Circuit Court of Appeals, where it is right now. But that what that means, though, is if this tax break for pastors' parsonage means the housing allowance for pastors is tax-free, if all of a sudden we have to pay tax on that, that means there's less going to the pastor to support his livelihood, which means the church probably needs to compensate for that, which means more money coming out of the church. And so that's a real threat to the economy of the church today. Also, these next things are really just more hypothetical, but if, you know, churches receive a lot of money every year. We shared with you our financial report at the big banquet. About $250,000 a year goes through. And that's not lining anybody's pockets. That's just to keep the lights on and pay salaries and take care of things. And if we had to suddenly pay tax on all that to the government, that would really upset the apple cart, and a lot of churches would have to fold or close. They financially could not sustain their way of life at that point. You know, if there were an economic recession, You know, I'd planned on and speaking on this for several weeks, and then all of a sudden last week you saw this major correction in the stock market. You know, if that went really bad, went really south, all of a sudden people are losing their jobs, unable to contribute. He calls it out in the book that, you know, there are a lot of churches just on the border month to month that would really have to fold if the giving disappeared from their membership. And we don't want to be in that place. Should the economy go bad, we want our church to be in a solid footing where we can be a ministry to the community. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have that concern overhead that should the economy go the other way, that we still then would have our building, we would be a place where people can receive ministry, be a point of strength in the community. And then the mortgage that we have for the church here is not like the mortgage you have at home. It's a commercial mortgage, and I don't understand all the elements, but I know that Ron told me that every 5 years we have to refinance. Because it's a large amount, and so you have to refinance every year. There's always a possibility that they could call that mortgage note, and we'd just not be able to pay it. So it's a remote possibility, but I just want to put these out there. If you look at real-world financial risks to us as a church and our existence today, these are some of the things that we should consider and plan for. I also want to follow up. Ron talked about at the big banquet a couple weeks ago on Sunday night, that we actually kind of made money last year. In other words, we finished with more than we had last year by about $20,000. That's a good thing, but a lot of that's already earmarked for missions and things like that. It's not like we have a lot of extra cash laying around. Well, we are in a healthy position as a church financially. I just want you to know that. But where we're not meeting budget, he said, giving was coming in, but it wasn't meeting budget. And I want to be really careful how I say that. The actuals, meaning what we receive, actually pays the bills, but it just pays the bills. Okay, so what we're receiving, but what that means is we had budgeted for other things we'd wanted to do, like facility repairs, but that money's not there. So if it's not there, we don't spend it. So I don't want anybody to think that the church is losing money every month. That's not the case. It's just that we're not able to do the things we would like to do. We've pared the budget way down. We're not actively contributing to as much missions as we used to in the past. You know, we're not actively supporting Mike Cater as a church entity any longer. We've not been doing that for a while. We have a few other smaller missions that we contribute to, but we're not able to do that type of thing that we would like to as a church. So just to clarify, the church is doing okay. We're breaking even financially, and we've got somewhere around $60,000 in the bank, and that's kind of our emergency fund, right? Should something really go wrong with the economy all of a sudden, we have some money to carry us for a few months of expenses. Church's expenses run somewhere around $17,000 to $20,000 a month for everything that we have. So you know what I know now about the church money. So here's our mortgage situation. If you were sitting down with Dave Ramsey, and okay, the first thing, let's get the mortgage out there, right? What's that look like? So we pay about $2,850 a month on the church mortgage. That's not insurance, like you have built into your own mortgage payment at home, or taxes. That's just the mortgage, right? Mortgage principal and interest. Well, over the next 4.5 years, we'll pay that off with $13,000 in interest that we would pay. Now, if somebody came in on a Sunday morning and wrote a $13,000 check, that would be amazing. There's a lot we could do with that, wouldn't it, right? So it would be much better to have that go towards ministry instead of continuing to pay interest on this over the next 4.5 years. And if you look at May of this year, we'll talk about May again in a few minutes, but May, that balance would be somewhere around $120,000. So as mortgages go, that's really not too bad for a facility of this size. It's really, we've worked it over the years, that mortgage has dropped, and so we're in actually not too bad a place. You know, we could ride that out, but I would rather put that $13,000 in interest towards real ministry. And that $2,800 a month could be going to benevolence and missions and things that we really need to other ministry causes, fixing up the facility and things like that. Now, by the way, these numbers are in your bulletin for your reference to take home later as you look about it. Another thing I want to update you on is some of you have only come in the last year and you don't know that we used to have a canopy out front, or an awning, on the front of the building. You might notice where the siding looks a little weird. There was an unfortunate, unforeseen incident, and nobody was harmed, but the canopy came down. It involved a truck that was not able to clear under the canopy. But so we actually have a check from the insurance. It's taken us this long, almost a year and a half, to get a check from the insurance company to replace that canopy. And we're looking at what's the best, most financially responsible way to do that. So that's not really in scope of what we're talking about raising funds for. That's completely a separate item altogether. So here's the list. This is actually in your bulletin notes for you to look at. This is what we're looking to ask God for this year. $120,000 to pay off the mortgage and be debt-free. And then we have a combination of actual quoted things and some estimated things that we would like to do around the church to fix things up on top of that. If you've noticed our bathrooms, they're a frequent point of comment with the stained countertops and the rusty dividers between the stalls and all this. It'd be really nice, you know, not to go extravagant and put granite countertops everywhere, but just to get some new countertops and put some paint on things and make it look a little better than what it is today. Do some fix-ups there, put some new fixtures in. Carpet's expensive. We just replaced the carpet in here in the sanctuary a couple years ago, but we got a quote for $30,000 to replace all the carpet in the back part of the building. The ripped and torn Sunday school classroom carpet, all that. It'd be really nice to replace that. It's very worn out. Paint, we have a quote from one of our own members to paint the back part of the building for $9,000. Lobby update, which is we just kind of penciled in $10,000 there. We'd like to refresh the lobby. We're not going to put a Starbucks, sorry. But we would like to just make it nice, put a fresh coat of paint, you know, do some decor things to make the lobby look nice and welcoming as well. Not that it's not today, you know, it works. But we want to fix things up as well there. And chairs. If you notice these chairs you've been sitting on for a while, after a while they're not as comfortable as when you first sat down on them. And some of them are stained. We have tried to unstain, to clean these chairs, and the plastic backs come off. And there's not a lot you can do to repair plastic. It would be nice to have some of those 3-inch cushion chairs to sit on, you know, on Sunday morning. So, again, if God provides the money, it'd be nice to do that. The parking lot, what can I say about the parking lot? You just drove in on it this morning. We've been wanting for, Ron's been talking about the parking lot for a decade, I think. We try to resurface it and patch it, but you can patch and patch until there's patches on patches, and it just gets worse every year. We really need to do some work in the parking lot, and we would like a new sign by the road. A new sign, because we have thousands of people that cross by here. And so many people come in because they see our sign. But you notice it usually just says Sunday 10 a.m. The reason we don't go out there and update it very much is I did this myself. I went out because I want to put a message on the sign. We don't use that enough. So I went out there and you got to prop the thing up. And then when you're trying to slide the letters in, there are cracks, and the letters drop inside the middle of the sign. Where did that go? There's a whole alphabet inside the sign. It's just broken. And we would really like to have one of those LED signs that we can change in the warmth and comfort in the winter especially, and just type in the message we want to be out there. We could really leverage the sign so much more and get really attract a lot more people through the... Because a lot of people tell us they just drive by the sign all the time, and that's why they came in. So we'd like to put more information out there about what's happening, what we're doing, and make it easier for that. We already have the stone fixture. It's really just placing that middle part. We don't know. We're guessing it'd be less than $10,000 for that. Our classrooms would be nice to have some updated decor in the classrooms as well. And then security. If you've watched the news much lately, there's a lot about security in churches. And there are some things that we would like to do just as far as basics for security around the facility, putting breakaway bars on all the doors, things like that. Some other things that would cost $3,000 to $4,000 for some improvements in that area. So altogether, this total comes up just shy of $250,000. And that's a lot of money. I don't know about you, but I don't have that kind of coin laying around. Right? But that's what we want to ask God to do this year. And I hope that you don't feel individual pressure to say, oh my goodness, I don't know what I can do. Would I be welcome if I wasn't able to give anything? You would always be welcome if you give. If you gave zero to any of this, you are always welcome here, and I want you to know that. All right, there's no pressure here. The pressure is we're asking the Lord to do this. But why? Why would? What are the benefits? This would be a huge milestone in the current history of our church to walk in. And I don't know if you've ever paid off your mortgage for your own home, but it feels pretty good to walk in and think, the bank don't own this anymore. You know, there's a freedom that comes with that. And it would be really nice for us to have that as a milestone in the history of our church to say that we together trusted the Lord and were able to do this. And everyone who does contribute to that would receive a blessing from the Lord. And this is one of those things when we talk about giving. We've talked about giving a lot. We don't give in order to get a blessing from the Lord, like some preachers on TV might say. You know, you send me this check and God's going to bless you. That's not the way it happens, right? But out of obedience and cheerfully, we give to the Lord. And then what do you know? He takes care of things. And that's kind of how testimony after testimony of people right here can share with you how that's happened in their lives. So this would allow us to have much more budget for ministry, really, every month. Ministry that we could put that money to use for better things. And it would model historic giving to younger disciples. You know, we are all about discipleship, and part of discipleship is obedience to Christ. I'm a big part of that. And part of, you know, Christ taught a lot about finances and giving. And so this would be an opportunity for everyone to have a new milestone in their own lives as well. It would also protect the church, ensure the church against any type of economic disaster that would happen around us, and we would be debt-free. A lot of good things would transpire out of this. And Jack's going to talk a little bit about Freedom 513. Kind of a funny name for things, and he's going to explain what that means.
Well, yeah, just the genesis of that name. Last fall, as I was praying alone over this, a couple of scriptures came to my mind. One was the verse in Proverbs that gives us a principle that if you, and I'm not saying, we're not saying that necessarily we're big Dave Ramsey fans. God has really used him. I don't want to get into a big thing of or his ideas, you know, where are they and who supports them. A lot of good stuff coming out of that ministry. But I'll just point out the scripture that says, it's from Proverbs, it says, the borrower becomes the lender's slave. It's just a principle. The borrower becomes the lender's slave. So when you borrow money from an entity, it's a kind of enslavement. You're saying, okay, I'm binding myself to this commitment. And if I don't, then the person can come and take whatever collateral I've put up. I'm agreeing. It's something I agree to. And so with that thought in mind, the borrower becomes the lender's slave. As I was thinking about the whole idea of freedom and slavery, a New Testament principle came to my mind from the book of Galatians. Now, super quick background of the book of Galatians. The gospel had been preached in this area, and later on some Jewish believers or people with Jewish sort of influence came in and said, hey, accepting Christ is great, but in addition to that, you need to teach people that they need to be Old Testament law keepers and have circumcision and follow the dietary laws. And the Apostle Paul wrote to them and said, you guys, you're not getting it here. You started off well, but now you've gotten off track, somehow thinking that your own human-generated righteousness is what creates your standing before God, and that ain't what does it. It's Christ, and it's Christ only. You're free. You're not bound by the dietary laws of the Old Testament or circumcision laws and so on. You have freedom. Hey, we have freedom. Woohoo, great. What does that mean? I can just go live however I want to live and sin up a storm? That's not what that means. He said in chapter 5 and verse 13, brethren, do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh. Because some people would want to do that. Hey, we're free. We're not bound by the Old Testament law. That means we can chuck the Ten Commandments and just go, woohoo, party, man. Just, you know, send up a storm. And he says, do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. So we're free to do what? Why has God freed us so that we can serve people? So, overlaying the whole debt situation over these principles, we could think, okay, why do we want to get free of our bondage, so to speak, to this entity that has loaned us the money? So we can just kick back and go, hey, we're free now. We can have all this extra money to just, you know, be self-oriented. No, that's not why. It's so that we can serve other people. So in practical terms, if we weren't committing $2,850 every month to the bank or whoever we borrowed this money from, I don't even know, we would have that money to do what? You tell me, what ministry have you thought about? Well, it would be really cool if our church could blah, blah, fill in the blank. One thing I'll just throw out real quick that has been on my heart, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that our country, including Columbus metropolitan area, is having a horrific problem with drug opioids and drug abuse. There was a young lady who attended here just a few years ago, was attending here regularly, and she died of a drug overdose. And the Maxims and Joan and I went to her funeral Tuesday night. Do we have, as a church, some kind of moral obligation to do something? And I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm just saying, gee, maybe that's an area of serving the community where we could really step in and have some kind of a program or ministry to really reach out and help people who are struggling with addictions. That's just one area. What could we do if we freed up $2,850 a month? The sky's the limit, and you all are so much more creative than I am. I'm sure you could come up with a lot of great ideas of how we could extend the kingdom with that money. Do not turn your freedom. So what we want is freedom. Borrower becomes a lender's slave. If we could get out of debt, we're no longer the slave of the entity that loaned us the money. We are free to do what? To serve. And so that's what we want to do with that money. And so as I was thinking about all these things and praying about these things, it just occurred to me, May is the fifth month, 13th. I just wonder if the 13th is a Sunday. And I pull up my phone, and sure enough, the 13th of May is a Sunday. And I thought, that sounds like a good goal to me, to have as a goal that by the 13th of May this year, that we would either have the contributions in hand or the commitments for those contributions to have completely taken care of our debt. And then beyond that, whatever funds people feel led to give, to have this even bigger goal to do the improvements we feel led to do, that would be really great as well. So
yeah,
that's the whole idea behind the Freedom 513.
It's also Mother's Day, so you might get a smaller special lunch that day. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
So, you know, the idea, would you be part of liberating us from the shackles of this bondage, sort of bondage that we're in? And let me share another thought. This occurred to me just in the last few weeks. I'm sure that Ashley and I both, to some degree, are motivated. Maybe it's sort of subconscious, but more I thought about it. No, it's there for me. Joan and I came to New Song 5.5 years ago, and we waltzed in here and, wow, hey, this is a great building and wonderful people, and we are the beneficiaries of sacrifices that others made who came before us. Some of them are here this morning. I'm not going to embarrass them by having them stand up. But there are people sitting in this room this morning who sacrificed immensely. Sweat and tear and treasure. I don't know about blood. Maybe that too. I don't know. Really sacrificed. And you know what? I'm benefiting from that. And so it's not wrong that I should think, okay, I might, who knows, am I going to be here in 10 years? I don't know, maybe, maybe not. But it's not wrong for me to think, maybe I should sacrifice for those down the road who will be here. And isn't that how life is? You give and you sacrifice and others benefit from that. Hopefully they catch the vision. I'm not just living for myself. I want to be an obedient disciple. And if others benefit from my giving now, then that's great. So the idea is give expecting nothing in return, not just, well, what am I going to get out of it? Okay, if I give, let's see, what's that parking lot going to look like anyway? You know, what What color are we going to... I don't mind people asking what color are we going to paint stuff, but it's not just about what am I getting for my dollar now. It's as much about those who will benefit in the future because I'm just obeying God right now.
And, you know, that also reminds me, most of you know this, some of you don't. I don't take any money from the church for a salary. So I don't profit anything from what I'm asking you guys to do. I really don't. And a significant portion of Jack's salary comes from missionary support donations. So neither one of us stand to profit in any way from anything that we're talking about today, really. But instead, if we flip that around, I don't receive anything from the church, but I give to the church a lot. And when I was at the pastor's conference this last summer, I really felt like for me personally, and I'm not extending this to anyone else, but I felt like God was calling me personally to really step up and give in a way that I've never given in my life. I'm really hoping to retire early in 7 years so I can go into full-time ministry. So I'm trying to bank and 401k and IRA and all that stuff I can right now so that I can do all right financially and be able to make a living and do full-time ministry. That's my goal, right? But outside of that savings, I've taken a significant portion of that already to start this building fund that we're launching. Now, in Matthew 6, Jesus talks about three things that you should do in private and not seek glory from men. He talks about fasting, talks about giving, talks about prayer. So Jack and I, as we talk about what we have personally contributed to this, we are not in any way looking for accolades or glory, okay? Not at all. But we want you to see that we are leading by example and contributing to this. And this comes out of 1 Chronicles 29, when David is ready to build the new temple for God. And he has his son Solomon. And God says, "You're not, David, you are not allowed to build my temple because you are a warrior with blood on your hands. Your son Solomon can do it." So David sets up Solomon, and he goes through this passage. He says, "Now, with all my ability, I have provided for the house of my God." And he lists all the gold and silver and bronze and on and on and on. He goes about all these things that David himself personally funded for the building of the temple. And then he says, "In my delight in the house of my God, the treasure I have of gold and silver, I give to the house of my God over and above all that I've already provided for the holy temple." Skipping down there, he says, "Who then is willing to consecrate himself this day to the Lord?" Welcoming them to consecrate themselves to the Lord is a spiritual thing, but also that spiritual dynamic involves surrender of all areas of our life, including our finances. And so he says, "Whoever had precious stones gave them to the treasury of the house of the Lord and the care of Jael the Gershonite. And then the people rejoiced because they had given willingly. With a whole heart they had offered freely to the Lord. David the king also rejoiced greatly." And again, I'm not looking for any glory, but I want you to know that I have contributed sacrificially already to begin the building fund. Me and some other brothers on this finance committee, Jack, have already started this finance committee, this building fund has already started, and we are already 25% there. I didn't give this entire amount, but we have already received $55,000. From certain brothers who were part of these earlier conversations, who felt committed to it. And then out of that group, not everybody had cash on hand or savings. One person pledged $10,000 over the next year. So if you add that up, that's about $65,000 out of about $240,000, $250,000. That's right about 25%. We're already halfway through the mortgage. So what we would like to do is this $55,000 would get us to finish the mortgage and then another $124,000 for these estimated facility repairs. So that's what we're looking at as far as where we stand today. We're actually making good progress already along this way. And Jack talked about May 13th. What we'd like to do is on May 13th, we'll take up an offering, a special offering that day towards this fund.
And I know that's right after tax refund season. That's not an accident, right? You can pray about that. Ask God what you would do with your tax refund this year. I know I depend on it. A lot of people depend on that to catch up from the rest of the year, right? And I realize that. And so I have already given quite sacrificially out of my own savings. I don't know, outside of the cost of my house, I don't know that I've ever put this much money towards anything in my life. That's how much I believe in this church. And again, I don't take a penny from the church. I'm putting money into the church as an example. And I want you to pray about that for yourself. Ask God what you would be able to do to help. So, join us in prayer then. Because God already owns it all. And I've got another verse on that in a minute. It's already God's anyway. He already owns it all. Let's ask Him together, help us provide to make this happen. And so we're going to look at May 13th as our big fundraising drive Sunday. That you can contribute towards the building fund at any time between, you know, for the rest of the year, really. But that's kind of our one day that we want to really focus on that. And if you can, if you can or able or make a donation or a pledge that day that says, I don't have it right now, but I want to trust God to provide this much over the year. Little extra each month we'll put back and put towards building or facility improvements. I know some people aren't motivated to pay off the mortgage. We would like to prioritize that over everything else, but if you just don't agree with that in your opinion, you're welcome to mark your donation as facility improvements or something specific in that bucket. But we would like to prioritize the mortgage first before looking at those facility improvements. Also, we have an online giving, Easy Tithe app for your phone. Some people use that regularly. When you give through that, there is a fee, like a 3% on a credit card and 1% on a check, a virtual check that you do through that. Don't use that to give a large amount. Okay, write a paper check so that we don't have to pay that little processing fee for your donation to that. And then the other thing that we want to be really careful about is you say, okay, I'll just take all my tithe that I send every month and I'll put that in the building fund instead. But then we don't have any money to pay the bills because we still have to pay the bills every month, right? We pay to keep the lights on and pay for Jack's groceries. And that's important. We want to keep doing that, right? Joan appreciates being able to go to the store and write a check. So we want to pay for Jack's groceries. We want to keep the lights on. So don't take your tithe and just instead write building fund on it. That won't help things. So this is over and above what your normal tithe amount would be. So new song then and now. People gave sacrificially to launch the building fund originally, kind of like the generation crossing the Red Sea. For us, we're talking about crossing the Jordan today. That's this generation. We're going to erect a new pile of 12 stones that says right here on this day, this is when God did it. We were able to pay off the mortgage. We want a new milestone for our church to share in as we cross the Jordan, so to speak. Now, when you read that 1 Chronicles 29 passage where David and Solomon are funding the temple construction and the families are contributing, it goes on to say, David is saying to God, he says, but who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer as generously as this? For all things come from you, God, and from your hand we've given you. O Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand. And it's all yours anyway. So what we are asking this morning is that we're asking God to do a miracle in our individual lives collectively that we could then bring that as an offering to him. So we're asking God to do it. You know, God freed the children of Israel from Egypt. God parted the Red Sea. God crossed the Jordan with them. God can free debt here at New Song and build our faith as we do this together. You know, you can imagine what it was like to be one of the priests who are leading this procession to the Jordan River. He's got the pole on his shoulder. And he knows Moses said that God said, if I put my foot in this water is going to move all of a sudden. And it's going to dry up. And can you imagine kind of a little bit of nervousness? That priest puts his foot down in the water and this river that's out of its banks begins to clear in front of him. So it's with that same nervousness, but yet expectation, faith, that we share this with you today. That this is a big thing. We know that if we were to pass an extra basket this morning, we're not going to get $250,000. Nobody's got that. But God, who owns everything, can work through our lives and our finances to bring that to pass. So over the next year, we're hoping to see that happen. That's what we're believing God for. So again, it's financially responsible. It builds my faith. It builds our faith. And it will give us the freedom then to do more ministries that really get involved in the community and outreach, because those things take money. You know what? I was walking through Noah's Ark down in Kentucky. Been to Noah's Ark down in Kentucky. Looking around at this thing, and I'm thinking, this took decades to make this thing. You know, when we read about it in Scripture, some say 40 to 80 years. This didn't happen overnight. This was not an accident. This took real hard work and planning, and financing came from somewhere, but God made it happen. And so I think about, I use that in context of a lot of these big things that God's asked of us, and I think, if God did that for Noah, if God did that for Joshua and Moses, He can do that for us also. So we want ultimately the glory to go to God. So we're asking you then to pray with us that God would supply the funds to help us be debt-free as a church, and then also to be able, as the funds are available, to improve the facility as well, that it would allow us to have a greater ministry impact in the community. So, Jack, I tried to say that as gracefully and as non-heavy-handed as I, you know, we just want to be open to share our hearts with you guys. This is really weird for us to to talk
I have one
about
last
this.
Thing to add. Comes to my mind. I guess an admonition from 2 Corinthians 9 that says, as each one has determined in his own heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly, or the Bible I memorized, and it says, or of necessity, today it says we're under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So I let that be the barometer. I have a certain amount in my mind. I just think, okay, I can give this much beyond this certain dollar amount. I just feel I couldn't give that joyfully, cheerfully. I would give it grudgingly. I think of one of my favorite movies is A Wonderful Life. Remember the place in the, toward the end of the movie? Remember the bank examiner that comes in to look at the books, and George Bailey says, well, we're broke, frankly. And he, the guy said, like, ha, ha, ha. Come on, hurry this up. I've got to get to my family in Elmira. Remember that guy? Anyway, he's got these black horn-rimmed glasses. And at the end of the movie where they're all singing Hark the Herald, people are coming in, and they're throwing down the money for George Bailey. And finally, the bank examiner himself, he walks up, and he holds this wad of cash and throws it down and Hark. I don't know. It's funny. Anyway, he's giving grudgingly. It's like this peer pressure where, well, okay, there you go, you know. That's not what we want. We want every person to give because no one is pressuring me. I just feel that this is what God wants me to do, and I do it joyfully. So if you're not going to do it joyfully, to me, that's the litmus test. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. Because we'd rather come up short knowing that every dollar in there was given joyfully. I would. I don't know about you. Yeah. I guess you agree. I would rather come short of the goal than be able to go, oh, look, we reached our goal. But knowing some of that money people gave, and they really didn't have a great heart about it. So that's my appeal to you.
Yeah. All right. Good. So now it's time for the offering. Oh.